Welcome. At this time each day, we'll provide some instructions, guided meditation, and announcements. One announcement at the top: the recording from the opening session, we didn't get the recording, so apologize for that. And what I'll do is the I'll re-record the Dharmat, just the opening reflections, to get that posted for anyone who missed it or wants to hear it. And it's Father's Day, with all those attendant meanings. And honoring the incredible karmic complexity of bonds across generations. And it's Juneteenth. It's Juneteenth. And we honor the human capacity for brutality and the longing for freedom. We actually honor both those forces in our practice too. And so, thought and freedom is the theme here. And as we settle into this first morning of practice, we can bring some thoughts along. We can bring some thoughts along as we begin with the experience of the breath. We can begin by bringing some thoughts along. And so, for whatever it's worth, a couple thoughts to bring along, which is one that this was the Buddha's practice. Yeah, this was a core practice. And to bring along the thought that if there's anything truly urgent, truly more important than practice right now, you'll get a very loud signal. Yeah. There are a lot of false alarms that will go off and things that exaggerate their own importance. But if there's something really urgent, you'll get a very clear signal. There will be no equivocation, no doubt. Like, I need to stop paying attention to the breathing. Yeah. But everything else is likely to be something in the false alarm category. And we bring along the thought that there are many ways for this practice to go right. Many ways for this practice to go right. There is the intimacy with this soft, neutral, generally neutral object of the breathing. And to be with a soft, neutral object tends to pare away meanings, less and less meaning. We build our stories and our complexity primarily out of intense affect, positive and negative, pleasant and unpleasant. We don't tend to build the house of cards out of neutral affect. And so there's a lot of value in attending to these simple experiences, soft experiences that are not heavily valenced. That's one way the practice can go right. But there are other ways. We learn about the gravitational thought field that draws our attention. What compels us? The ways we try to make sense of the world, the ways we try to insulate ourselves from change, from risk, from unpleasantness. The ways we try to cobble together a life, a meditation, a day, a retreat. We learn about all of that. That's one way for the practice to go right. And we learn about patience and equanimity and simplicity and renunciation. Many ways for this practice of breathing to go right. And fortunately, we're not in charge of engineering our own healing and our own awakening. It's just encoded in the logic of the Dharma. And so we practice together in the spirit, bringing a few thoughts along and leaving the rest. So we relax whatever can be relaxed. We allow whatever tension remains to remain. And although we'll be featuring the breathing in the foreground, we want to see what needs your blessing, needs your permission, needs your love, what other experiences must be permitted in order for you to truly take your seat, to truly arrive. And so we find the balance between the extremes of entanglement on the one end and suppression on the other. And the whole field of your experience has a kind of permission. Something in our body, sense of arriving. Radically here. Maybe you begin by sensing the impact of your breath on the whole of your upper body, your waist up. The subtle or dramatic sensations associated with the breathing in the whole of your upper body. maybe more subtle, but the impact of breathing on your lower body. So the impacts of the inhale and the exhale, and the whole of your lower body. Unifying these two halves of the body, since the breath broadly across your whole body, as if the pores of the skin are exchanging oxygen. The zones of contraction and expansion. A sense of the breath unifying the whole field of your body. We start to see all the ways we try to shore up our life. The ways we build and fabricate. The ways we model, develop and establish and reestablish, model a sense of self, a sense of the world. And the Buddha's invitation is to put it down. To put yourself down, to put the world down. To bring just a few thoughts along. To become more and more intimate with the experience of breathing, maybe across the whole body. Maybe at your belly, maybe at your mouth or nostrils. But to leverage the neutrality, the neither pleasant nor unpleasant quality that often characterizes the breathing. To let the neutrality support you in not building, And the past floods in. Seemingly begging us to extract meaning from it, to leverage the past to shore up our future. And the future looms. Far more imposing way than this here now. And so it feels as if the present is only ever a down payment for some future. And it's so innocent that our animal bodies do all of this. But the Buddha said we're looking for safety in the wrong places. And so we put all of our hope into what's here. This simple breath. We practice forgiving all phenomena. Maybe forgiveness is the balance point between entanglement, suppression, we just give our attention over to what's here. It's good to practice with you. So I'll turn it over to Niz for some instructions on walking movement.
You might take a moment if you need to stretch your legs if you've been sitting for a while. Just for a moment. So so one of the things that happens on retreat is that the continuity of practice creates a momentum of mindfulness and concentration. And this builds during the retreat. The more that awareness stays present, continuous, the more it builds. And walking meditation is an important part of building that momentum. Walking meditation can be just as significant a form of meditation as sitting meditation. Some people take to it right away and, you know, they find it really satisfying. But others, it can take time to develop. You know, it was that way for me. I was really surprised once I really found my rhythm in walking practice, how wonderful it was. But it did take a little bit of time for me. So if that's the way it is for you, you know, give it its time, you know. Maybe sitting meditation didn't grab you that easily either. But it's the same mind that is present sitting or walking. The same mind will get caught in clinging or grasping, whether you're sitting on the cushion or whether you're doing walking meditation. And the same five hindrances show up: wanting something, not wanting something, restlessness, how much longer, you know, sleepiness, doubt. All the same things show up. The object of meditation doesn't matter as much as letting go of clinging. That's what we're here for, to let it all go, let go of the grasping. And when we do apply our efforts integrating a walking practice throughout the day, the momentum of continuity can strengthen our concentration. You know, one of the things, I'll mention in a moment kind of the formal way we do walking meditation, but I suggest that you start your walking meditation the moment you get up off your chair or cushion or the floor. That's when it starts, the continuity. You know, whether we're going to the bathroom or to get a drink of water, or we're going to our path where we're going to do a walking meditation, let that be the beginning when you get off the cushion. So for those of you who haven't done this, we usually do formal walking meditation using a path that's about 20 feet long. And we walk back and forth, making really clear that we're not going somewhere. So it really allows us to settle in. You know, we're not waiting till we arrive. And then when we come to the end of those 20 feet, we come to a mindful stop, stay very mindful during the turn, and then mindfully start again. The stopping at each end can help us notice that the attention has wandered, and it can allow us to recommit. We can say to ourselves, if we need to, okay, I can be mindful for these next 20 steps. It can be similar to counting breaths that way. But sometimes with these online retreats, we may not have an ideal place to do walking meditation the way we might at a residential retreat. But it's quite doable, even in very small spaces. When I've done home retreats, I can walk outside during the day, but at night I've done it in the living room. And so I can walk in a circle. And the one disadvantage of walking in a circle is that there's no natural stops to catch your attention. So I place the Buddha at the head of the room. And so when I reach the head of the room, I bow and start again. And so I had that natural stop, you know, to recommit for the next cycle. And for those of you who can't do walking due to some physical condition, You can get the same benefits from rhythmical movement. People have used bringing their hands up and down, elbows bent, just alternating right and left, just as if you were walking. But there's other ways of rhythmical movement that can work for you. This idea is just it's the same thing over and over. We're not being overly creative. Just very simple rhythmical movement. And it can be done sitting or standing. Or even laying down. So we can do walking meditation at any speed. What's really important is to have a sense of ease. The eyes softly gazing downward without focusing on anything in particular. We're not out, it's not a nature walk. It's an internal connection. Nature walks are wonderful, and you know maybe we'll do that once a day, but keeping the attention in the body and the internal sensations can really help develop this momentum on this retreat. It can be helpful to walk a little bit on the slow side, but again, what's most important is a sense of ease. People with back or balance problems sometimes can't walk very slow. The speed doesn't matter. What matters is our attention. Sometimes walking faster may bring some ease if we're agitated, or it can also be really helpful if we're sleepy. And sometimes the mind is calm and alert. Slower walking may feel more natural. Sometimes we can vary our speed. One of my teachers, like what he used to do on retreat, he would, the first 15 minutes, he would walk kind of fast. The second 15 minutes, he'd kind of slow it to a moderate, to a stroll. And then the last 15 minutes, he'd walk really slow before he finally went right and back into the hall to meditate. So that's what he found supportive. Again, it's not a right way, but really what's supportive for us. The basic instruction is to first connect with the body, just standing there. Don't start walking till you really entered your body and feel your body standing. We can allow the attention to settle in the feet or lower legs. And then pay attention to the sensations of walking with each step. Some people find a quiet mental labeling of each step helpful to keep the attention steady. But the attention should be mostly on the sensations of walking. If you're walking very, very slowly, you can mentally use the label lifting, moving, placing. If maybe we're walking more of a stroll, we just label lifting, placing. And if you're walking on the fast side, you could use stepping. But use the labeling only if it's helpful to stay connected with the physical sensations of walking. So for those of you who are already delighted with walking meditation, please enjoy walking. And those of you who are open to finding delight in walking meditation, enjoy walking. So thank you.